I couldn't really accept when I did well, because I kind of put that in as part of my little charade. I thought, you know, it's not really that great because, you know, look at all this shit over here. You know, look at all the stuff that I haven't done well as compared to what I have done.
So you're telling me, yeah, when I failed, that fit the script that I carried around in my head, and, you know, and I assimilated that into how I felt about myself. When I succeeded, that was part of the charade, and, yeah. Good for me. Okay, welcome to the Dr. John Duffy podcast. I am Dr. John Duffy. Let's see, the way I like to do this podcast is from this philosophy. I think every one of us has been through something. Every one of us has a story worth telling, and we can find something to relate to and some degree of inspiration from almost anyone's story. And in that spirit, I want to welcome my guest today. His name is Andrew. Welcome, Andrew.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dr. Duffy.
I'm thrilled to have you here, seriously. And I'm going to throw a couple of demographic facts out there, and you just reach across and slap me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Andrew is 20 years old?
Yep.
Okay, 20 years old. College sophomore?
Yes.
And lives outside of Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the part of your story that I was hoping you would share with us today involves the last couple years of your life. And I'm wondering if you wouldn't just kind of start broadly and just tell us a little bit about what the last couple of years have been like, starting with around the time you graduated from high school.
Yeah, sure thing. So graduated high school, went off to college, tried that for a year, and due to kind of personal factors and some other unexpected stuff that came up, didn't do that well. So then the next semester, I kind of took a break. I did like a semester abroad in Mexico, and now I'm back working at a construction site, going to community college, just trying to figure out what the next step is.
Okay, so take me back a little bit. So you're a high school graduate, and you're off to college, and you're suggesting, like, okay, that year away didn't go very well. Mm-hmm. Can you put a little color on that? What was it that that failed you a little bit there?
Well, I think I personally wasn't really ready for college. I think I had gone there for the wrong reasons. I went because of the people that I would know and not really kind of the experience that I would get. And then a friend of mine who was close passed away. So then that kind of added to my troubles and kind of stopped going to class. And really made kind of a huge mess for myself.
Hmm. Now, you know, when you say you lost a friend, and I remember Jack, and you know, in my field, you know, that sometimes feels like such a smoking gun, and we think like, oh, well, that had to be it. You know, you lose a friend early on in your freshman year, this buddy of yours who doesn't even get this freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that must have been what threw you off. Are we oversimplifying if we say, oh, it was that loss and the sadness that resulted that threw you off your track?
Yeah, I think that was definitely like a big factor there. It was kind of tough to deal with. But I think more so of it was me and what I was comfortable with and what I thought I was capable of doing at the time, which kind of culminated with the loss of Jack into kind of a total shutdown on my part.
Yeah. Can you describe the shutdown a little bit?
Mm-hmm. So I was having kind of, I guess, confidence issues, and I wasn't feeling that good about myself. When I heard that Jack had died, I kind of naturally wanted to not do anything for mm-hmm. a little bit, kind of wanted to process. And then... when I was ready to, I think, start up again, I had already kind of missed too much, or at least I thought I had, because, you know, classes move fast at college, you know,
sure.
You miss one and you're pretty far behind. And I had missed a couple at this point. So I was thinking, you know, I'm in too deep. I don't think I can get myself out. And that was like a huge burden on me.
Yeah,
I didn't tell
imagine.
Anyone.
You didn't?
No.
Why did you not tell anybody?
I was embarrassed. I thought, I had gone to college to kind of being able to succeed on my own without my parents, you know, right there to support me. And now that I had kind of failed, I thought, oh, you know, like this is on me. I can't tell anyone. I'm going to have to try to figure this out, but I didn't.
Right. So in the couple of weeks after Jack passed away, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, like advice I might have given a guy who was in certain circumstances, similar circumstances. And I think I might have said, oh, well, you know, go and talk to a therapist on campus, visit your professors, you know, they'll work with you. They'll understand. It'll be fine. Did you have that kind of thought in your head? Did you think like, maybe I can pull this together? It's reasonable that I took a little time to grieve my friend.
Well, I thought I could pull it together, but I thought that I didn't need anyone's help for it. I kind of figured, you know, they're like big classes at the college I went to, a couple hundred kids. So I figured, you know, what's the professor going to care about the one who hasn't shown up for 2 or 3 weeks,
right.
You know?
Yeah. Where's Andrew McLean?
There's row 53, seat 20. There he is. Yeah.
Right. So, in a way, you were able to kind of get lost in the crowd. What was that like for you? This whole period of time after the loss, and as these classes, as time passes, and if I understand you right, you're simply not going.
It's dangerous to get lost in the crowd, to go to big schools like that and not really commit yourself to going all the time. That's a very quick way to kind of lose yourself and fail classes, which is what I ended up doing. So when I wasn't going to class, I guess I was just trying to hide the fact that I wasn't going to class. I would leave my dorm to make it seem like I was going somewhere, but I wouldn't go far. I'd go like to the computer lab downstairs, or I'd literally just walk around trying to look like a student who was going to class, but inside I was a mess. I was thinking, oh my God, everyone knows.
Oh man, Andrew, that is heartbreaking, man. I'm so sorry you went through that like that. Everyone knows? You felt like everyone knew?
I felt like there was some kind of expression of guilt on my face, or people would just kind of, from my class, would be like, there he is, row 53, he's missing, found him, you know?
There's the guy. Everybody on every quad knew.
Yeah, everyone knew that I was
the fraud.
A slacker, yeah.
Slacker,
yeah.
The slacker. Is that the right word? Is that what it felt like?
That's what it felt like. It felt like I had not done my part as a student to kind of get the best education I could for myself. And I felt like I had failed myself and my parents. And it was a terrible kind of guilt.
Were you ever, forgive me for the personal nature of this question, but did you ever feel so hopeless that, you know, you thought like, you know, it wasn't worth going on?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a lot of what I was feeling at the time. Kind of this, dug myself into a hole, can't get out, you know, the hell am I going to do?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Hopeless. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the end, what did you do? So that semester passes, right? Mm-hmm. And you said like, I get this string of Fs, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens next? How do you present that to your family? And, you know, do you stay at school? Do you pull out and leave?
Well, okay, so then I called my parents, and I remember this because it was in this real echoey stairwell, and so I'm like talking to my parents but also crying a little bit, so it's just like this total mess of noise, and my dad's like, what? I'm like, calm down, tell me what's wrong. And I tell him, and I mean, he's not thrilled, obviously, but he was so much nicer about it than I was expecting. I thought he was going to be like, well, you're done with college. You're not ever going again.
Right, right. So was that moment an enormous relief to you to know like, okay, my parents, you know, I'm not being disowned. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm almost getting the impression from you that you thought like, oh, I've got to do something to be good enough for my parents, for my family.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, both my parents, like straight A students, worked so hard. And then, you know, I blew off, essentially didn't even go to my first semester of college. And I'm thinking, you know, oh my God, what are they going to think of me? Are they going to let me back in? you know?
Right, right, right. Is that part of the formula that got you where you were, the fact that your parents were really high achievers? I hear that from kids sometimes, mm-hmm. like, oh boy, I'm never going to live up to what my dad did at Harvard or something like that.
Yeah, I definitely was feeling a lot of that.
Yeah, yeah. Did this all start with college? Or would you say, you know, that there was some self-esteem issues that you suffered beforehand in high school, in middle school, or earlier?
I would say, unresolved self-esteem issues. And I think it's as far back as middle school, which middle school is obviously the worst time in anyone's life. It's just a horrible, horrible place to be.
There is a consensus there. I think a lot of people would agree with you on that.
So right when everyone is kind of growing like into their bodies or whatever, and they're learning all kinds of new colorful language, I didn't know kind of what to do. I was unsure of myself. And, I remember in sixth grade or something like that, I'd always done really well, straight A student. And then I didn't do something, I guess, in math. And my parents go, oh, it's fine. Maybe you're like a B student. And in my mind, I was like, oh, my God, like they don't care. Obviously they care. But, you know, there's like a little bit of a change in their personality where it's like, oh, you're not the best, but you're close.
So that little and I heard you correct yourself, like, no, it wasn't that they didn't care. Was it kind of like they had less confidence in you just suddenly?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a moment. There's a moment that you remember.
It could have been more than that, but that is a specific moment that I remember.
So, you know, one thing I want to note and correct me if I'm missing it, Andrew, you know, parents who are listening, take note of that fact, right? That if you drop your bar of expectation and if your child realizes, oh, it feels like my mom and dad suddenly have less confidence mm-hmm. in me, your confidence gets shattered even more so than they would have suggested, right? You didn't feel like a B student. You felt like something worse than that.
Yeah, I felt like, I don't want to go back to being so dramatic, but I felt like I was not part of the family. Like, here my parents are, straight A grads, you know, really hard workers, and then, oops, there's Andrew.
Wow, I hadn't thought of that. Right, so it's bigger than just what I'm doing right now. It's legacy. It's like, you know, this is the way this family runs. You're not keeping up.
Yeah, you're a I don't know what the word is, but you're like a something about a cog. I don't know.
Well, it definitely feels like kind of like you're less than. You're mm-hmm. at the very least, you're a disappointment, and whatever the club is that we've created in our family, you're not a member of it. Now, can you say now, as you sit here now, mm-hmm. kind of unequivocally, like, well, I know my parents didn't intend for me to feel that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they always wanted the best, you know, set your standards high so you'll do well. But I guess even in that one little moment when they set the bar just a little bit lower, it kind of tweaked my thinking about myself and kind of what I was capable of.
Well, help me figure this out then. So I'm the parent of a sixth grade boy, mm-hmm. right? And he tanks on a couple of math quizzes or something, mm-hmm. right? Instead of kind of dropping my bar and saying, well, I guess you're a B student now, mm-hmm. you know, I get it now. What do you think's a better tack to take on that?
Trying to be a little more relatable. Like, school's getting harder and harder, I think. I wouldn't be alarmed if maybe your kid does poorly in one area one time, you know?
Right.
Maybe say to them, oh, you know, math's hard for me too.
Right,
even if
right,
it's
right.
not, just kind of create that bond that you can kind of share with your kid.
So kind of draw them out a little bit and recognize that something might be going on here more than just a math grade. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think... yeah, I think that's absolutely fair.
Okay, and pardon the hint of self promotion. I'm up in this next question, but did you feel like up to that point your parents were like fully available to you, and then
nice name drop.
That's a registered trademark, by the way. and they were a little less so. I mean, were you less open with them from that moment forward?
Yes. I think whenever I did well, I wanted to hide it so I could only show off, you know, look at me, still an A student, still part of the family. Don't look over here. Like, this wow. These are my skeletons in my closet. Don't look.
Wow. So you picked and chose what to present to them, and it was yeah. the good stuff.
Yeah. It's like almost like I made a little like Facebook profile for myself, like, oh, here's me getting an A in math. Oh, here's me doing great on a project. But like none of the other kind of C or below stuff, nothing I thought was not on the same level as what my parents expected of me.
Wow. And was that a difficult dance to do, or did you get good at it?
Oh, yeah. No, it's difficult. I got good at it. Well, I mean, when you hide a semester of college grades from your parents, that's a tough one to do. But
you know what? I'm going to stop you there for a second. I think that's true. I mean, I actually think that is a tough one to do. You know, part of the reason I wanted you to talk about that mm-hmm. is every year I work with a whole bunch of guys, maybe a dozen guys every single mm-hmm. year who have a similar story. And, you know, and part of me thinks whenever I hear it, you know, the dance that you do to present something as perfect that yeah. is, you know, the opposite, I'm kind of impressed by it. I mean, you know, did you
well,
ever?
Don't be. It's a horrible thing. It's almost stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. Let's come back up to that college year. How stressful was it for you?
Incredibly. I think more so than any experience I've had before, any athletic event or anything academic, or like when I asked a girl out, that was stressful. But like that's nothing compared to this.
Right. You know. Right. So you're alluding to you know, athletic events, a girlfriend. I think back to, you know, I've known you for a long time, and mm-hmm. I think back to your high school years. And when I think about you in high school, mm-hmm. I think Andrew seemed like a guy who kind of had it all going on. It seemed like, you know, and I didn't know how you were doing in school, but it seemed like, oh, Andrew's a really smart guy. He's a really funny, witty guy. I think a lot of people would agree with me on this. Incredibly likable. You had a girlfriend part of the time. You were an athlete all the way through. You were a swimmer, which I think is kind of, you know, the most badass sport you can be a part of. And your swim team just won state, by the way. Congratulations on that. That's go LT. You know, so part of me was surprised when college kind mm-hmm. of busted for you that year, because I was thinking, well, this guy, Andrew's on a bit of a roll. Like, high school's gone really well for him. Mm-hmm. Am I missing something here?
I think it was, again, just another part of that dance where I was trying to show that, like, I was just like everyone else. I could do school and sports and, like, have a girlfriend and, you know, be all that. And at the same time, I'm not doing so well, and I'm putting it in my closet. I'm hiding it away.
Got it. And the nature of not doing well is an artifact of what happened back in sixth grade, and this kind of niggling self-esteem issue that never really goes away. Is that right?
Yeah.
And did you ever get a break from it? Like, you know, in all those years from sixth grade through your freshman year in high school, was it ever like not there?
Only when I was around my friends and we weren't talking about school and we were just hanging out and I could totally put it out of my mind, didn't think about it. Other than that, I don't think so.
What impact does the fact that you seem to have friends who loved you? You know, like, I work with a lot of kids and they'll say, you know, like, oh, I don't necessarily get along with my family very well, or my parents don't get me mm-hmm. somehow, but my friends, they carry me through and I feel good about yeah. myself in light of them. Yeah. Is that a part of your story?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I'd swam with these guys for 4 years, so we were pretty close. And, you know, they never wanted to talk about school. They never wanted to put any right. pressure on me to apply to college. They didn't care. I mean, they got their own thing going on.
So the way you describe it, it sounds like the perfect crime in a way, right?
Yeah. I'm a little impressed with myself, yeah.
Is it possible that you're not giving yourself enough credit for what you did accomplish and what you have done? You know, because so far what we were talking about is this kind of self-deprecating stuff, these losses, or these what I think you're depicting as failures, mm-hmm. you know, but for a guy who swam for 4 years, who held on to friendships and things. Is that fair, you know, to depict the whole time as this kind of failure when, in fact, you know, was it all a fail?
No, I don't think it was all a fail, but I think it comes back to that kind of lingering self-doubt that I kind of had put in me. And so I couldn't really accept when I did well, because I kind of put that in as part of my little charade. I thought, you know, it's not really that great because, you know, look at all this shit over here. You know, look at all the stuff that I haven't done well as compared to what I have done.
Wow. So, man, that is profound, Andrew. So you're telling me, yeah, when I failed, that fit the script that I carried around in my head, and, you know, and I assimilated that into how I felt about myself. When I succeeded, that was part of the charade, and
yeah.
Good for me for pulling it off.
Yeah.
But not like, you know, hey, my self-esteem just jumped from a 2 to a 4.
No. That was all, I guess, like a glass house where it looks really nice, but, you know, like one bad thing, it falls down.
Man. And so we string this all back to this one conversation with your parents back in sixth grade. Is that right? Is that where, you know, you feel like, okay, the wheels fell off then,
yeah,
and the script changed in that moment, and then every bit of data that I took in about myself was contingent upon that, was kind of reliant on that way of looking at myself?
Maybe not like a wheel fell off, like it maybe wasn't so big, but I think like a screw came loose or something, where as time went on, yeah, the wheel fell off, and then, you know, the whole cart tips over.
Yeah. When the cart tips over, is that a good thing? I mean, is it kind of like good when it's like, okay, all bets are off now, man. Like it's no longer, the charade has now crashed and burned.
Yeah, that was me in like the echoey stairwell calling my parents and crying like, oh my God, I messed up so bad.
Right.
Yeah, help. Mom, Dad, help.
In your worst scenario in that stairwell, Did you think you were going to prison or something? I mean, what did you think was going to happen to you?
I honestly don't remember, but I guess prison was maybe an option, or like the military or something. Like, you can't be a normal person. You have to go somewhere else.
Man, you can't be a normal person. And did you feel that way? Did you feel like...
Yeah.
And when you looked around... So you're surrounded by, what, 35, 40,000 people around your age?
And I'm all thinking, you know, I'm at the bottom of, like, the pile here.
Yeah.
And here they all are up here. And I put my friends, like, at the top of the pile, like, why am I not up there? Why can't I be like them?
Wow. So your comparison point was 35,000 people above you in your mind.
Yep.
Yeah? Man. All right. So the wheel finally comes off, right? And that's the end of freshman year.
Yeah.
And you do something completely different.
Yeah.
After that. So tell me about that adventure, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. So, you know, my parents kind of said, you know, school didn't work out so well. We gave it a try twice and it didn't go so well. So why don't you take like a gap year or something like that? And I was originally really opposed to the idea before I went to college, because I thought, no, I just want to do the standard 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, you know, whatever else to get, like whatever kind of degree I need.
And was that part of like, kind of like, no, don't let me continue this charade. I can do this.
Yep. Yeah. I need to just make it through this like hell so I can had do something I want to do 8 or 10 years down the road.
So forgive the optimist in me, but was the wheels coming off, was that a good thing in the end? Was that an important thing for you to have happen to you?
Absolutely. I think once I stopped kind of playing that game and putting up the charade, it really did help me, in the long run.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me about what this gap year thing looked like for you, and whether you were looking forward to it or whether you dreaded it. I kind of know the answer to that, but go ahead.
So my mom just looked this thing up, and it was an outdoor leadership school. And she goes, why don't you do this? And I go, I've never been outdoors. You know, I'm from the suburbs. I can't survive.
There are bears out there.
Yeah, there are bears. I have to poop where? So she tells me this, and I'm panicking. I'm thinking, this is going to be horrible. I'm not going to make any friends, and I'm going to fail there. So
wow, yeah. So you thought like geography and doing something different. That's not going to change the script. So nice try, Mom.
Yeah,
got it. Okay.
And so then I go on this trip, and it's like a 3-month trip, and it's hiking and kayaking and sailing in Mexico, and it's like unbelievable, and it's a total role reversal. I'm totally confident in myself. I'm doing great in class. And it felt great, but then I remember maybe a week before we came back, as soon as like the idea of us coming back into the real world and seeing like our parents and stuff, as soon as that kind of entered my mind, I went back to like my old habits.
Wow, really?
Yeah, really.
And your old habits of thinking about yourself?
Yeah.
All right. Before you do that, before you go there, take me back. Take me back to, you know, like, so you're kayaking and you're sailing and you're mountain climbing. This feels to me like a badass script breaker. And I think you're telling me, well, yeah, to some degree it was.
Yeah, it absolutely was.
So take me to the center of it. You know, how were you feeling when you were out there on the ocean, in the mountains?
Like I was supposed to be here. Like this is the best place where I'm feeling kind of the best about myself, and this is, I felt like so refreshing and fantastic, I guess. I don't know.
No, it sounds amazing. How did being there and doing these things change the script? You know, because you're describing a script that now at this point is what, 7 or 8 years old, right? I mean, it's kind of etched in granite, it feels like to me. And suddenly you go out there to Mexico and it changes on a dime. How did it change, you know, and how did you feel about yourself while you were there?
I mean, totally confident in what I was doing, although I'd never hiked or done any of this before. So I really couldn't even cook. So
where did the confidence come from?
Just doing all these things that I'd never been able to do and succeeding in them and having people there who were saying, yeah, Andrew, you're doing a great job. Keep going.
But people had said that to you before, right? I mean, you had a swim coach say that to you. You had some teacher somewhere say that to you. Why did it make a difference when some camp counselor in Mexico is saying it to you?
It actually should have made the least amount of difference. It should have been like, who are you? Get out. I think it was because they were strangers and they didn't know me before this. I really did kind of value their opinion, and I trusted them to say, yeah, you're doing the right thing, you're doing a good job, as opposed to someone that I know who cares about me and I care about them, just kind of supporting me because.
And maybe telling you what you want to hear because they love you, because they care about you.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that lingers for the entire time that you're there, right? Yeah. And you were gone for 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
So you had 3 months break, effectively, from feeling not so great about yourself.
Yeah.
How hopeful must that have been? How much of a relief was it to feel differently about yourself after all these years?
Unbelievable. So we didn't have any phones or any connection to anything that wasn't, you know, right here, right now.
No wonder you never answered my Snapchat.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was a good one, though.
Yeah, well, that's
worth the wait. And just being able to kind of live and do my own thing independently, like truly independently, like no parents watching, no friends supporting you, like this is you and 20 strangers, and doing well in it, huge confidence booster.
I can tell, I can see it in your eyes, and it sounds amazing. Was it critical that they were strangers, that it wasn't anybody giving you any kind of false sense of, like, you know, confidence in yourself?
And I think it was important because right at the beginning, you know, you didn't have a friend who would like, hey, do this for me, you know? You had to do it for yourself so you could kind of prove to everyone else that, yeah, you know, I belong here. I can do this.
Right. I remember talking to you a day or two before you left.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen nausea before.
Yeah. I'm remembering it now when I'm sinking into my chair. It's horrible.
So how long did that what were you feeling on the way out there, and how long did it take for you to assimilate to being out there and feeling differently?
So my parents and I went out there a couple days early. I think maybe 2 days early before we left. And that was brutal. That was, you know, my parents were like, oh, you know, let's enjoy it while we're out here. And I'm thinking, no, kill me. Kill me now.
Why? What was so awful about that for you?
Just the anticipation, uh-huh, and not knowing who anyone was, what it would be like, you know, still no experience with any of this.
Got it. So it wasn't about being with your parents. It was purgatory.
It was, yeah, it was like, just get it over with already, you know?
Right. Okay. All right. So finally you meet these people. Mm-hmm. How many people are you out there with?
I think about 15.
15. And in retrospect, mm-hmm, you know, so you 15 strangers.
Yeah.
How do you feel about those 15 people now?
I mean, I told you when I came back, but I thought they had become some of my absolute closest friends. I like love them.
And anywhere, first of all, that's so awesome, so amazing to hear. Did it ever shift over the course of the 3 months? Did it ever feel like they were like your friends back home and they were telling you what you wanted to hear and trying to pump you up? Or did it always feel like, nope, we all have each other's back? Was there something about this being kind of a group mission,
yeah,
that gelled everybody, mm-hmm, together? Yeah?
I think it was, you know, we don't know each other, so we can kind of be a little more candid, a little more honest. And, you know, if you tell someone they're doing a good job and they're not, you know, everyone will feel it. You know, the backpacks will be heavier. You won't be able to paddle right. The boat will sink, you know?
Right. So there must have been times, because you're right, these aren't like little things that you're doing, right?
Yeah,
this is serious.
It's a little, it's survival. Right. Yeah, this is.
So you had to be, you couldn't kid yourself that you were doing a bad, yeah, job, because you were making it day to day to day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was proof, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And was there criticism out there? At, yeah, times was it like, come on, Andrew, pick it up, or, you, well, know, you're rowing wrong. I don't know. What do you, I don't, yeah, know what you do.
Rowling's right.
Is it?
Okay. Never rolled. It was horrible. Yeah. I didn't get any of it personally, which,
right,
was a big win right there.
Yeah.
But at some points we'd have to say to each other, like, you know, Brendan, kind of pick it up, man. You know, like, we're all helping each other out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, can you cook right now? Because I'm, I don't know, like, emptying out a boat of water.
Right. Got it. So it wasn't all like touchy-feely nice stuff. It was like,
no, it was,
we got
yeah,
shit,
I mean,
to
it
do.
Could be.
Right.
Like,
right,
when we weren't doing anything, it was really nice. But then when we were moving and having like tasks to do, you know, it was go time.
Yeah. All right. So 11 of 12 weeks pass, mm-hmm, and it's great, right?
Yeah.
And you're telling me a week before you come home, you feel differently.
Yeah.
What happens there?
I think my attitude changed, and the people who had been with me out there, they noticed right away. They kind of say, what's wrong? What's up? I kind of start receding into my shell or whatever it is. I'm, mm-hmm, apologizing for things that I'm not even doing, you know?
Wow.
And it was, I'm going back to my old habits, and I'm feeling it. And they're calling me out on it, so I'm trying real hard to stay in this, you know, Bear Grylls badass survival mode. But it's so hard.
Yeah.
I
hear you.
I don't know why.
And you're telling me the impetus for that was, I'm going home. I'm, mm-hmm, going back to this old mindset. And,
yeah,
so, you know, so I spend a lot of time in therapy with people saying, yeah, geography, it doesn't solve many problems. Would you argue it can cause some? I mean, would you argue that if I were still out there, or if I weren't here at home, maybe I would still feel that great feeling about myself?
Yeah, I think that might be the case.
And so was it prophetic? In other words, when you came home, what you anticipated in that 12th week? Did it bear itself out? Did you not feel as great as you did in the 11 weeks before it?
I think yes, but that was part of just constant questioning from my family, like same questions over and over. And I was kind of like, oh, come on, you should have just been there, you know, like totally unreasonable. And yeah, I guess kind of getting used to not being with the same people again and not having that kind of candid honesty where it's, I'm back with my family now and they're like, oh, you did a great job. We love you. We're so proud of you. And yeah, I mean, obviously I appreciate that. I'm not trying to downplay that at all, but
right.
Yeah, it's a little bit of pampering and uh-huh. It's a little bit of kind of protecting your feelings that I really love not having that.
Yeah.
In that Mexico environment.
So let me see if I can interpret this and tell me if I'm wrong. Do you feel like, yeah, I get back and my family treated me with the same kind of kid gloves as if I weren't competent, and yet I kind of knew I was?
I think so. I think they were, I mean, and obviously I appreciate everything they're doing, but, you know, they start cooking for me again and they start doing my laundry when, like, a week or two ago, I'm, like, cooking casserole and just air drying out my shirt on a beach.
Right. Yeah. I can certainly see where there's some culture clash,
mm-hmm.
and I can see where, you know, certainly like you come back to the same house with the same people, who haven't been on this, you know, 12 week adventure, you know, where some things fall back to their old patterns. That feels like kind of the rhythm of life in a way.
Yeah.
But the way you felt about yourself sounds like it changed so dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
How's it gone since then? So this was a while back,
yeah.
And you're back in school and doing some other things. How are you feeling these days?
I think my lowest point, I'm obviously not like crying in a hallway, lowest point, but mm-hmm. I think the lowest point after the trip was right when I got back and I realized, you know, totally different environment. I'm not going to get kind of the stuff I was looking for out there. And then when I started school again, I kind of had to pick myself back up and say, you know, I can't feel sorry for myself all the time. I got to work now, you know?
Right. How tricky is it, given that it's a different kind of work than paddling a canoe or, you know what I mean? Like sailing a boat.
Yeah, it's tricky. And you go from moving like 8 hours a day to sitting 8 hours a day. That's a
shift.
Right. Yeah, that's a pretty sizable shift. Yeah.
it's also not lost on me that the 8 hours a day now is the type of thing that you were doing before that kind of was the impetus for you not feeling great about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So is school difficult for you again? You know, how does it feel just to be back in classrooms?
Well, it depends on the subject. If it's math, then it's prison. I'm in prison. But if it's anything else, I guess it is kind of refreshing to just kind of sit and work, learn, and know that I'm moving myself in the direction that I want to go towards something I want to do.
Got it.
And not surviving.
And is that... Has that changed? You know, in other words, I assume you go to class now and you're mm-hmm. and you're doing better than you were when you were away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. How much of that negative self-esteem drag is, you know, lingering?
I think there's some. It's I can feel it sometimes, and that's kind of obnoxious. I mean, for me, just to kind of remember, you know, all the stuff that I've done, you know, why am I still feeling this way? Why am I still kind of weighing myself down?
Yeah. Do you ever take a moment to remind yourself of what it felt like to be out there? Like, you know, to watch you tell this story, I can tell you, like, it's palpable. I can feel how differently you felt out there. And part of the reason we do things like that is to create an atmosphere where we can feel better, right? And so you had that, and you are not a stranger to it. Is there any way that you can tap that? Is there we were talking a little while ago about a moment that you remember that kind of is in your memory. Can you bring us to that moment?
Yeah. I think maybe the best moment for me was only a couple weeks in, and we're hiking and we're in this kind of national park, this mountain range, and there's this like really big mountain, and then there's this huge field of like grass and flowers separating that from us, and then we're just like behind the tree line, and I'm sitting there with like three guys, and we're just kind of looking at the mountain and looking up, and like the sun's coming in, and it's like this beautiful scene, and I just felt kind of really calm and very sure of myself, which was a totally new experience for me.
Oh, that is beautiful. Can you bring yourself back there? Like, it looks like you just did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I kind of zoned out there a little bit.
So is that something you can tap? I mean, you know, like, given that you felt good about yourself in that moment, and it feels indelible, it feels like a moment you're never going to forget.
Yeah.
So in the worst moment in a math class, can you allow yourself to kind of tap back into that and allow yourself to feel some of that good vibe, not just about, like, the world and nature, but about you?
Yeah, I think it is possible. I haven't quite perfected it yet, but I'm working on it.
I can appreciate that. One thing I noticed is before you left, you would apologize for yourself quite a bit, and you alluded to that. Here we've spent an hour talking, and I noticed you haven't apologized for yourself. Is that?
I almost just did.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You almost said I'm sorry.
I know. Brutal.
I'm proud of you for that. Do you feel it though? Is that an easy thing to eliminate from the repertoire?
I think so. I think it's part of this moving in the right direction, kind of confidence boosting year I've had.
Yeah.
From Mexico to working, like actual working, and then going to school. It's all kind of moving forward, and I'm not really who I was, the kid crying in the hallway.
That's awesome, Andrew. And so I want to give you a couple of opportunities to give some people a last thought or a last word. For any parents who might be listening to us, given the arc of your story, is there anything that you let's say you got a group of parents listening to you right now? Is there anything you want them to know when their child might be struggling in a class, let's say?
Well, obviously, I'm not going to tell you how to raise your kid. That's on you. But I think being relatable and letting them know that, you know, there isn't this huge amount of pressure on them. Even if you are kind of pressuring them, letting them know that it's not all doom and gloom, and you'll kind of be there for them when they're getting A's or they're getting F's. You know, that's something I think is really invaluable to kids and their confidence and their self-esteem. And when they start losing that, they start losing like all of themselves.
That's incredibly sage. So effectively, you're good enough no matter what's going on. You're good enough. You're good enough to be part of this family. Yeah. You're good enough as a human being. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what do you say to a young guy who may be listening, who is kind of in the thick of it? He's half an hour away from the phone call in the hallway.
Yeah.
but he's in that dorm room, and he's in hiding. You know what I mean? Kind of like you were. Is there a message you have for that guy?
I think it's going to suck a little bit, but coming clean is, I think, the best thing you can do, because your parents love you and they support you. And if you tell them what's going on with you, what's troubling, they're obviously going to want to do something to help, you know?
Yes.
They're not going to say, oh my God, you know, out of the house with you, don't come here again.
Right. So be honest and liberate yourself in that way.
And when you do liberate yourself, I think it's one of the most rewarding and uplifting experiences you can have. Like my kind of burden all through freshman year, it felt like it was physically weighing me down. And as soon as you let that go, as soon as you take that leap and you tell your parents, this is what I did, it's unbelievable.
That's so awesome. Gratifying. So and you allowed yourself kind of a hard reset, right? So this is you called it effectively, mm-hmm. like this is the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
I cannot express to you how grateful I am to you. I think it takes a lot of courage to tell your story, especially the tougher parts of your story. And you've done it here with a lot of grace. And I want you to know, like, first of all, that I'm grateful. And a lot of people go through these things and don't recognize the emotional core of it. And mm-hmm. so, you know, shedding a light on it and being honest about it, it means the world. It means the world to me, and it probably means the world to a lot of people who are going to hear it. So thank you, Andrew, so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And it does get easier for anyone who's there. I mean, the only reason I'm able to tell my story now, and it's not even like a huge story, but the only reason I'm able to talk about it now so candidly is because it gets easier. And I promise it gets easier.
All right. Listen to a man who knows. That's Andrew. Thank you again, Andrew.
Thank you.